Friday afternoon deploy can only work from home for the next month.
So today's episode that came out today, last week's episode, was social distancing week one. This is probably, I don't know if we can keep that going, because that might be a 12-week miniseries at this point, is what it seems like. So, social distancing week two, here we go.
At some point, people are just going to get so used to it, they're going to be like, whatever.
This is normal.
Right now.
This is normal. Yeah, people are going to get sick of us talking about it. Because I'm sick of hearing about it and talking about it. But you know what we're going to talk about this week? It.
The same thing.
Yeah.
Hey, well, because it's like, I don't know. It's just affecting everyone, right? So it's hard not to talk about it. It's a pretty, I feel like it is a pretty significant change. And it keeps changing more and more every day. So I was just reading earlier today that here in Arkansas, which this has not been a thing before, that
we don't have many things here.
Not including shoes. Breweries, our local breweries are going to deliver beer now.
We got, I think, do we have carry out from bars going right now?
Yeah.
That's a new thing.
I feel like that's a thing that now that we have, we can't go backwards.
I think there's a lot of shit like that.
Yeah,
but like we have it now, and this is permanent. And hopefully, carry out beer is one of them.
I think so.
They say it's an emergency thing, which is funny to me that they deem that like this is an emergency, so you can take a beer with you.
Yeah,
home alone.
We can't.
That's a great idea.
We can't separate people from their medicine in a medical emergency.
College can't stand the withdrawal.
Real emergency. Is all the college kids, in-person classes were canceled, and then they all piled into Dixon Street. So they're like, we got to get these kids their booze, but keep them from bumping into each other.
Yeah.
So now we'll just put the booze in a car.
Yeah.
Nothing
can go wrong.
Out of our hair now.
That's right.
Indeed.
We got the booze pickup is a thing. Online grocery pickup, I think that's going to just be how everyone grocery shops now. For those that weren't enlightened.
Into a crazy bread line.
Yeah, it's nuts.
You have to wake up in the morning and order, and it's like you get to pick it up 2 days later.
They're not taking orders more than 2 days in advance. Yeah.
Right.
But there's a lot of people that hadn't picked that up yet. And now they're going to, they've realized how awesome that is.
We were well on that train, but we tried to make we made an order and it was a couple days and this was before they instated like the 2 day period. And then like the night before it was supposed to be the next morning, the night before they're like, sorry, we canceled your order.
Oh no.
Like, son of a bitch.
Oh man. They can't be doing that right now.
Did they give an explanation? Yeah. Were they just like low on
they were just
stuff?
Like, we canceled your order. I was like, okay.
Oh, it's drag.
But it worked out. Like I just went to the store. And it was fine.
We had
the only thing that they didn't have when I went was paper products.
That's still a thing. I can't believe that. That's
I can't
crazy.
Believe that either.
Yeah, I installed a bidet. That helps a lot.
Welcome to the club, Alan. It's a civilized way of life.
It's refreshing to be here. I must say.
You're gonna
play bad and bougie every time you go to the bathroom now.
I was thinking about how like so speaking of like stuff going back to normal after this, I don't know how I'm going to use a public restroom.
No, dude, I'll tell you one of the worst things in the world. Okay,
never do that ever again.
That's going to change. It's permanent. One of the worst things after we installed a bidet at home. Is getting to work first thing in the morning and drinking a big cup of coffee and then going, oh man, I should have stayed home for a little bit longer.
It
sucks.
So you you guys need to post the bidet to purchase, because I think home bidets, and all I think of is back when we were doing cloth diapering for our kids.
We have one of those.
That was just straight up a water hose.
Yeah.
With a sprayer on it.
We have one of those too, and it works.
Diaper washer slash bidet. I was like, that's not a bidet, y'all. That's just a water gun.
We've got a couple of different ones. We've got two bathrooms, so we tried a cheaper option than the other bathroom, which I don't know is a big difference in the more expensive one. The more expensive one's got a little toggle switch, so you can really angle that guy just right. and it just feeds into, like, you install a T, you know, where the water's
where
coming
the water
into
line
your toilet,
comes in,
install
yeah.
a T there, and then the water line goes to it, and it bolts in underneath your seat, like where the toilet seat bolts in there, like that.
They're pretty. It's pretty slick.
I have no idea.
I'm looking into my Amazon history, Tyrell, to share the one that I got with you.
I need it.
It's back here somewhere. I got to go back a few years.
On that one. No,
dude. The rest of the world's already figured this out, Blake. It's
yeah.
You
Europeans have been way ahead of us on this one.
Yeah.
I want to ask some, like, really inappropriate questions.
Go for it, man. Hey, they're out of stock, Tyrell, but it's the Neo 180. it's the Lux. L-U-X-E is the brand, and it's the Neo 180. Non-electric, very basic, utilitarian. I don't even know what I paid for it, but it is currently out of stock, as you can imagine.
I'll have to look mine up.
Lay it out there, Blake. We'll edit it. We'll pretend to edit it. Yeah. How many times have I said that, right?
So what is the order of operations then when you like use one of these?
Well, you poop first.
Yes.
Yeah, that's number one.
Yeah.
Mine has a nozzle cleaning mode. So you flip it over to it sprays behind
it's got the nozzle.
Yeah, it's got a little cover behind it. And it sprays behind the cover, and so it creates just like a swirl of water that gets any debris that might have ended up on the nozzle off of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So you run the nozzle clean, then you flip it over to the appropriate cleaning setting that you need. Mine has a general purpose cleaning mode, and then it has a gendered cleaning mode.
Has a Taco Bell cleaning mode.
No, it's not that sophisticated. No, it's got regular and female, and that just changes angles. And then mine has just like a pressure lever, so you can like pull up and down on the handle, and it adjusts the pressure to your comfort level.
Okay,
I'm doing my best.
You checked all the boxes. Mine's similar. Mine's got like a little dial that is like it doesn't have different modes, but it just has a toggle switch that you can adjust the angle of the nozzle, and then it's got a dial that you just dial it to when it's comfortable. And
okay, so
yeah. I'm excited about the number of people that are tuning in to listen to five software engineers talk about bidets.
Yeah.
And look, for the second week in a row, because bidets came up last week too.
It's true.
Yeah. it was one of my first pro tips for working from home.
Hey, I've got a Lux too. That's one of the ones. I can't find the quote unquote fancier one that
I thought you were about to say the Phantom. I was like, you have a brand of bidet called a Phantom?
That'd be awesome.
That sounds
awesome,
amazing.
Right? Yeah.
Is it tweet every? Never mind.
I'm doubting that this stuff is going to last as long as they're saying.
I don't know.
They're just going to flip out eventually. And it seems like at this point, people are more scared of not being able to have money than they are the virus itself.
That's true. Well, I mean, there's the whole economic side of it. That's crazy. If you want depression, if you want severe depression and you're feeling like you're lacking in that, there are several great threads going on Reddit right now. Actually all the time. That's either people, having like an AMA from Italy or some like majorly affected area, or, someone did like an open AMA, asked Reddit essentially of like, hey, anyone who's, lost your job due to this, what's your story? And it's just post after post after post after post. And it's just like, it's brutal. And that's happening. And so there are a lot of people that are like, totally like what Willa just said. They're like, I don't want to die, but more importantly, I got to eat first, you know. They have some more basic needs that are more pertinent. So that's crazy. And bad, you know. And it also kind of gets me thinking that like, this is exacerbating the problem, but there are people having those types of problems constantly around the world. Now we just have a lot more of them, but like there is already an endless supply of those stories going around.
But Casey, the economy is doing so well.
It was killing it. And you know, if you went to the right meetings, you pulled your money out of the market before it all went bad. You gotta hang out with the right people. You gotta know the right things.
I don't.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah. It doesn't matter if you pulled your money out or not, because now you're going to have the opportunity to buy stuff low anyway.
Yeah, some people pulled their money out and then they bought low. Some people have already doubled their money.
Sometimes it's impossible to tell. Like, it doesn't even matter, because a lot of times if you just try to time the market, it doesn't really work.
Totally.
Pay off in the long run.
The saying from all the conservative investors is time in the market beats timing the market always.
Yeah.
Dollar cost averaging or whatever it's called. All I know is that I'm not rich enough to have huge feelings about that. All of my stocks are 401k, so I'm just not looking at it for another 10 years anyway. That's my plan.
Yep.
So, last week, Blake, we covered work from home tips because it occurred to us that we got people on this listen to the show that probably it's easy to assume that everyone in this field works from home, at least some, but that's not true. Some people are working from home the first time, and that shit is not as easy as it would necessarily seem. Seems like an easy thing to just not go to work and work from home, but that can be tricky. So we kind of shared some of ours. I'm curious what you got going. How long have you been working from home now?
Man. So I worked at, when I was at Nielsen, I worked from home for 6 of the 11 years that I was there. And was like 100% at home. When I was at RevUnit worked, usually 1 or 2 days a week from home. So man, it's probably been, God, 11 years combined of all of that. Yeah. Nielsen was really good about that. They were kind of pretty progressive, you know, 11 years ago or whenever.
I take it you went from working in office and moved towards work from home.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. My tips are pretty much this. I'm sure it's stuff that you guys shared. I get up and still do the same morning routine every morning. And that's why, so we're on video, which you're not going to share, but that's why my hair looks like shit. Cause I wear a hat every day.
Mm-hmm. And look at me. Like, that's Tyrell. That, we got our hat action going on.
That's totally normal.
Yeah.
I still get up, you know, make breakfast, shower, get dressed, do all the normal things, keep it as normal as possible. As if you were going to an office. I have like a dedicated space for like an office, which is helpful for me.
Yeah.
Kind of separates this room from the rest of the house and everything else that goes on in the rest of the house. And I found that helpful. And then I try to make sure like once a day, I get out of the house and go for a walk or something, like walk the dog or whatever. And that's super important. Even if that means just like going and standing outside.
Yeah.
As far as like the actual work part, things that help is, I've always found that like in these types of situations when you're working from home, like over communicating is way more important than under communicating. It's easy when you're in the office to like share context. If, you know, Bob sits next to you, you can tap Bob on the shoulder and give him a piece of information. And then by proxy, if I'm sitting not even next to those people, they hear that info. They still hear that information. That doesn't happen
right
in these situations. So a lot more probably like public communication and public channels of whatever your communication app is of choice. That's super important. Like, it becomes even more important to document stuff. You just have to think more in terms of like broad exposure to the what's in your head.
Yeah.
I don't think we think about a ton just working in an office, because a lot of that is easier to just.
You get it by default, right? If you go over to Bob's desk and start talking to Bob, the person that sits next to Bob that maybe works on that project can listen in and like chime in. And we had the exact same conversation internally that was like, hey, if it's the type of conversation that you would walk over to someone's desk and start having it kind of openly in the room, we're just doing those calls in like public channels. In Slack is what we're using. And so like trying to avoid having a one-on-one like phone call between two people, unless it's the type of conversation that you would take one-on-one in a conference room or something like that, right? If it's a private conversation or doesn't need input from other people, that's one thing. But if it's like, I would just walk over to someone's desk and ask that question, we just pop. And the idea is, if you're in a channel and there's a call going, assume it's an open door conversation. And unless if your head's down and plugged in, that's fine. Otherwise, like, feel free to just pop into those, because there's probably something relevant to your work going on in there.
Yeah.
And I would say that kind of goes hand in hand with, like, you know, even just what you write in a channel. Like,
yeah,
I think it becomes more important to have those conversations, kind of like Blake was saying, in a public channel.
Yeah.
The same with the conference call.
Yeah.
And exactly because of that. Because when I'm in a room with, like, you know, like, we're a small group, and so, like, just being in the room with everyone, I kind of know what everybody's working on, you know, from a high level at least. And I could jump in and probably help anyone, you know, if they had a question or anything. And that gets easily lost from working at home.
Yeah.
So if you keep those conversations public in one way or another, you know, you still retain some of that.
Yeah. Someone at work brought up something that I think I do by default, just because it's like part of my personality, but something that was really helpful, I think, for some people was when you're typing something, like what Alan was saying, and you send a message, like, putting it's actually really helpful to include like emojis
like times. Are really, really beneficial. As much as I was not a believer when the emojis came out.
Yeah. Because you can't see the person's face.
Yep.
And so if the example that he gave was like just typing yes, hitting enter, typing yes and putting like a laughing face, or typing yes and putting like an angry face. All of those things mean something different.
Totally.
And if you were talking to someone in person, you would get that, you know, the facial features to accompany what they're saying, so you would understand that context.
Yep.
You don't get that. And as like a follow on to that, doing video chat kind of as much as possible. We kind of have a thing at work where, like, if you're on a call, your like video's on.
Yeah.
Like, like sometimes people have to turn it off for reasons, right? Because maybe they're not wearing pants or whatever, but like most of the time everybody needs to have it on, because again, you need that human connection.
The body language goes a long way. We've been trying for that as well. And so it feels weird to me. I'm not like an emoji person, or like historically haven't been, but I've noticed the same thing, right? Like when you're purely down to text, the word yes with no punctuation can be interpreted any number of ways. And unless you give some direction on what you're trying to communicate, you run the risk of someone misinterpreting it. And then having a hard time, it's like you have no, like an emotional context when you're having a conversation.
Right.
And so like, if you're a leader talking to, people that report to you, you could like really quickly, like maybe cause people some stress, you know, or otherwise just miscommunicate what's going on in your projects with your peers and stuff. So that's definitely important. We should be using emojis like Instagram influencers, just every other word.
But sometimes it's hard to tell like the degree, you know, like especially with like an angry emoji, it's like, are you really angry?
True. Then you have sarcasm in there as well. Yeah. Where you have all the really obscure emojis, because there's a bunch of them I don't know. Like the one where the guy's grabbing his face and the top of the head's turned blue. I don't know if that person is scared or exactly what that reaction is, but I see it sometimes and I have a hard time interpreting.
It's like a screaming surprise face.
Is it surprise? I thought it was fear. See?
See, it's actually a reference to a work of art.
Yeah.
Oh, I know the one that you're talking about.
Scream.
Yeah, the Scream.
Scream, I believe, is actually the name of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's more like fear, the painting is.
Ah, see? So. See, we have different interpretations.
Yeah.
Which was my point. Not that one was right or the other wasn't, but that there's room for interpretation there.
Yep.
Yeah.
I totally think.
And I've known people to abuse the shrug emoji. As well.
Oh, that shruggy.
I'm a big fan of the shrug emoji, I've known people to abuse the shrug.
This is me.
Yeah.
Some emojis, because they just look like especially that one, because they just look like a petty little jerk. Like, they don't...
Damn, Tyrell, calling you out.
I don't think I shrug emoji. Have I shrug emoji?
I don't know if I've ever seen you use the shruggy. So. I've always had the same reaction to the shruggy. I've never seen someone shrugging in a way that I didn't interpret as like fucking not my problem, you know? Like,
yeah, that's exactly how I use it.
Yeah, okay. I read it correctly then.
Sarcastic answer.
So I've got a hat that I never wear anymore.
Has the shruggy in it? Because
back once upon a time, it was really funny for like 3 weeks. This would have been the summer of 2016. Mm. And I was going to a 4th of July party and found Make America Shrug Emoji Again hat.
Oh, man.
And I was just like, that's amazing.
Yep.
I'm totally buying that. It was the first like spin on the Make America hat. And it was just like, it's political, it's topical, it's funny, making fun of the Trump situation. And it's just like it was a huge hit at the big 4th of July grill out.
Until around then, November.
November happened.
Yeah.
And it would get me straight stabbed.
Yeah.
Anywhere I went.
People gotta be standing like, within 2 feet of you to know that you're wearing it ironically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then they would think and then the people who realized it was in jest would also be upset. And so it's just like depending on who you were and where you were standing, at some point you would hate me.
Yeah.
Like, you,
there was always a sliding scale of hatred.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And so that is my first artifact that is my case that I will finally make in my dissertation about how we are in the darkest timeline.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that many of us now have mustaches plastered to our faces, also an indicator of the darkest timeline. There's but that hat's funny somewhere still.
I definitely
one of the other multiverses that hat still kills.
Yeah,
like, I can wear that anywhere.
Yeah,
like, oh man, that's true. That.
Also, the worldwide pandemic might lend some credence to your darkest timeline.
It's also,
theory.
It's also one that I didn't want to lean into, but
yeah,
I think we all knew that.
Yeah, that's coming.
There was a pandemic in 1720, 1820, 1920. And now 2020.
It's the 100-year pandemic.
We've been on a dark timeline. We've been on it for 500 years.
Or it just revolves in a centennial rotation.
This is why we're in the simulation. Like, this is another piece of evidence that we're all in a simulation.
Yeah. They're tweaking that pandemic.
Every 100 years.
That while loop at the top is like extended out to 100 years now. All right, I have something non-pandemic related to talk about, if that's all right. Okay. Unless you were going there, Blake. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, I wanted to give one last tip briefly.
Lay it on us.
So it's one that actually I don't think gets brought up a lot, but when I first started working from home, I struggled a lot because I struggled to set boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found is that I would work like 14, 15 hours a day, every day without and like not disconnect. So make sure to set some sort of boundaries. Like when I walk into my office in the morning,
I'm at work
for 7 or 8 hours or 9 hours, whatever. And then
six
I'm
and
not
a half
work anymore.
Yeah.
Six and a whatever. Yeah. four hour work week or whatever. And then don't do it. Like, you know, that includes like it's easy to just check Slack all the time and do that. So, set set realistic boundaries and stick to them, because it's easy to be sort of in the work mode all the time when it's so close to you all the time.
For sure.
Yep.
And you don't have that physical boundary of the the car ride between here and there.
Yeah, where you decompress and kind of go like, oh, and then drive in the driveway, and now I load the home program. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Eject the other one from memory. And I've always felt like people talk more about setting boundaries with like the people that you live with. I'm in here, I'm working. And that's important too, right?
Yeah, that is important.
You can get those kind of distractions, but people don't spend nearly enough time talking about you setting boundaries with your job from home, right?
Yeah.
Which is also an important part of it. And like, that's the one that like, if you get interrupted and like you're living with people that maybe aren't respecting boundaries, you'll have a very immediate stress from that and like a very immediate effect from it. You'll get distracted from the task you're working on right now. If you don't set a proper boundary between your home life and your work when you work from home, that's one that just builds over time into this monster that you're constantly trying to outrun. At least in my personal experience, that stress, it's not immediate. It's just like one day you're 6 months in and you're overcompensating because of a sort of a sense of you're never unplugged from it. And so you start to feel guilt constantly. Mm. It's 9 o'clock at night and you're making a hot chocolate and you're like, oh, hope my boss doesn't find out that I'm in here making hot chocolate, and not sitting at my computer working. So I think that's super important.
Yeah. You can fatigue yourself really easy.
Mm-hmm.
On one last tip note, just from my experience from this week, I've actually got my whole family in Slack now.
Nice.
My wife and my two oldest sons that are tele-learning.
Teleschooling.
And kind of, we're starting to treat each other during work and school hours like colleagues, in a correct sense. We're not.
You're passing memes.
You code review your kids' homework, like.
Oh, I do have to code review my kids' homework. I code review my kids' homework.
Send me a PR.
They can Slack me and be
like, "Do you cake or poop their homework? I need to know."
If they submitted it digitally, I would. I can't poop their homework in the comments on their Google Docs.
For our listeners, cake or poop is a system for code review that we use. Cake emoji,
approving.
Yeah, poop. You get
disapproving.
It.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Disapproving. You can cake specific things, poop on specific things.
But you can't merge that PR until there's all the poop is cleaned out.
Yeah. Or I'll approve it. I'll approve it and poop on it. Poop free. I've done that.
Oh, okay. So poop's not approved, but poop does not like kill it. Okay.
It's beneficial to kind of help put guardrails around the relationships and equip them in that way. Because otherwise they're just like, they'll come up and knock for something superficial. Yeah. And it's just like, hey, I'm going to give you a tool. You can ask me a really superficial question and know that you have asked me.
Mm-hmm.
And I will answer that the next time I'm available. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like, oh, cool. And then we get to like chat and have goofy conversations here and there. Like they're not extensive because they can't type that fast.
So they're not running circles around them. That's fun.
but that's been a shift that we actually just instituted today. And I would argue that it's going well. Although I realized, I've been slacking my wife for like 20 minutes and she doesn't have her computer with her. So I'm like, oh man, I got to shift
back into regular communication.
Where
mode.
We're going to get dinner from and getting no response because she's not on Slack like we are all the time.
It's true. I'm more apt to check my Slack messages than my text messages.
Cool. Yeah. I had to early on create a Slack for Alyssa and I just way back in the day because I would get plugged in as you guys know and she would be like texting me or something and then finally call me and I might finally notice it vibrating my phone and check it, and so I was like, here, I'm always staring at this screen all day, let me make a new check, a new Slack channel for you.
It's there. True.
I did that with Sarah too, because I was zoned in and like she would text me stuff and I would just like blazing through it. And then all of a sudden, or she'd be talking to me and I'd have my headphones on, and helping make that, because we are technically coworkers now. We do very different jobs, but mm-hmm. we are coworkers in the sense that we're
Your coworkers
like her coworking space.
She's online. Quick, get a dinner recommendation. So Blake, this was news last week, and I wanted to bring it up last week, but you weren't here, and I needed you here for this.
I know what you're going to say.
Of course you do. So how do you feel now that Microsoft bought NPM?
I think it's a good move, honestly.
Defend yourself now.
So based on the past like 18 months of NPM, someone needed to buy them. And, you know, Microsoft actually is one of the biggest contributors to a lot of the really big JavaScript open source projects. You know, obviously they do TypeScript.
I was going to say, like, TypeScript, your other favorite.
They obviously do TypeScript, and they have, they're like big proponents of like Webpack, is an example. And, so as long, you know, they didn't frame it as, and probably rightfully so, they didn't frame it as Microsoft buys NPM. That's not what the article said. The article said...
That's what the article I read said.
everything that I saw, even the thing that NPM sent out said, GitHub buys NPM. And I think...
Oh, I actually didn't even think about that dynamic of it. I honestly thought about it as like as siblings in a tree. Like, oh, Microsoft bought GitHub, and now they've bought NPM as well. I didn't even think about, are they rolling it under GitHub?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, and GitHub is going to take direct ownership of NPM, which
that
I think
makes a lot more sense.
Makes sense. Yeah, I think it really makes sense, and I'm actually kind of excited, and I hope that what this means in the future is, if you pay for a GitHub membership or whatever, for pro, I hope that means in the future that we'll get private NPM repositories included in that, because right now those are separate services you have to pay for. And there have been actually many times, I was just working on something recently as a private thing where I was like, I really want to publish this thing, but it's still like a personal thing that I'm not ready to put out there, and I would like to release it. And make it private, but I'm like, I also don't want to pay the $7 a month just for that.
To have that.
So hopefully, I'm hoping it does stuff like that. And I do think it makes sense from a web development perspective. There's so much of our day-to-day world that revolves around GitHub. And is it a bad thing? We've had this conversation about similar things before, but is it a bad thing that it's all getting so consolidated? I think there are trade-offs, right? So
I think definitely consolidation leads to a vulnerability of bad things happening. Doesn't necessitate they do, but, you know, single point of failure, right?
100%. Well, yeah, and I think once you're kind of the biggest kid on the block, right, you have it's easy to get complacent.
Yeah. Start giving people wedgies at that point.
Exactly. You're the asshole.
Who's going to stop you, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
NPM install wedgie.
Yeah.
It's a thing, probably. Actually, I'm 100% sure it is. I think I wasn't too surprised, honestly. And I'm not sure if you guys have kind of kept up with the NPM saga over the past 18 months, but it's been pretty shitty over there, honestly. A bunch of the people that helped build it.
We've talked about it a little bit with you. I haven't followed it like too. Yeah,
it was good, and then it got really bad. They sort of brought out in this guy to try to help them make money, and he kind of did no offense, but typical businessy thing, and just shit on everything and treated people like shit. And so a bunch of the really great people there left. Like basically all the people that I really respected in the community that worked there, they all left.
Oh, really?
And so I'm hoping that this means more good things in the future for NPM, just because I think it's a good thing. I think it's an integral part of, you know, JavaScript and being a web developer. So
right. I don't know if that's my child or someone else's child.
It's definitely not my child. She's not here yet. Okay. But at some point, I imagine that will be a thing that happens in my house as
this
well.
Is like, we talked about this a little bit last week. This is also part of the new normal of everyone working from home. And like, and now you can be on a conference call and like legitimately, I find myself, this has happened several times today where I'm taking my headphones off going like, wait, is that my, do I need to solve that? Or is that someone else? Yeah, you know,
that's what I was having to do that earlier.
Yeah.
And people are solving that out there, but yeah.
Okay. It's so I was genuinely curious. Like I'm pretty sure
it's here.
All tiny voices sound the same with compression on top of them. I had one earlier that was, I don't know if I told you guys, I told someone yesterday, Paige was painting. Henry was taking his nap and she, we're very slowly painting our entire house, one wall at a time. And so she decided she was going to put some primer down. And Henry came, he woke up from his nap and he got up and he was helping her. And then all of a sudden I was on a call and I just heard like murder screams coming from, and I was like, oh, that's definitely my kid. And so I was like, put my headphones down, paused the call and walked away and went out. And he was like hyperventilating, gasping for air. And I was like, dude, what's going on? He was so upset. And he was totally naked. I was like, what is happening right now? And the answer is, what happened was, he was helping mom paint. He got some paint on his hands, which was fine and normal. And he got some paint on his clothes as well. He decided to go to his room and change his clothes because he had paint on it. And so he took his clothes off and then he picked up his favorite blanket, off of his bed. And it's a brown monkey. And he put it down on the floor and he saw white handprints on it and realized that he had gotten paint on his favorite blanket and then just exploded. So everyone was fine. And you'll be happy to know that the blanket washed out just fine. But as far as he was concerned, he had murdered Monkey Blanket with his bare hands by accident. And was
I know that feeling too. I can only imagine, you know, when you reach down, you're like, oh, and I just need this under here. Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah. He had the same reaction that I have every time, like, I break the head off of a screw when I'm working on a mechanical project. It's like, oh, no, I've destroyed it. Oh, no. I can't get this back.
Do you also scream like that when you do it?
I strip down naked and just like melt down in the laundry room.
I just picture you standing in your wood shop.
It's just like ripping, like, just taking my shirt off and just like,
like the opening scene of Apocalypse Now. Like
Paige comes out there, it's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, was how he was talking. He couldn't even get a word out, you know. It's like, dude, chill. I really thought he was hurt. So yeah, that's fun, man. Last time I worked from home, I didn't have a kid. So this is new to me.
Yeah. My sister has to work from home. Like, she has to teach school from home. She has to teach two of the AP classes.
Yeah.
And then she's going to deal with my niece, who's 3 years old.
Yep.
That's going to be fun.
Mm. And those kids.
Yeah, no kidding.
Even though they're AP kids, they're still high school kids. They're going to be relentless. They're not going to let you get away with any unprofessionalism in the classroom setting. Kids are brutal.
Yeah.
And yeah.
That's going to be tough.
So it's actually been kind of interesting. This week's been kind of weird because on Monday, the daycare was open. Mm. On Tuesday and Wednesday, they were not open. On Thursday and Friday, they were open again.
Mm.
And I just got an email that said they're going to be closed all next week. So
got it.
Like, so we've been in like limbo land trying to figure out what the fuck
what the plan is. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's been, I would say that's been super frustrating.
For sure.
Because that's, I mean, my wife works at the VA, and which is also insanity right now, by the way.
I bet. Yeah.
So it's like if I'm home, similar to what Willow was saying, I have to, you know, entertain my daughter plus also work if she's here too. So
yeah,
it's been trying to figure out that is tough, and you know, with certainly with a 3 year old, like Willow said, but you know, with a 5 year old, it's like, it's still the same. There's very little work that can actually get done if they're also here and not being, you know, playing or whatever. So
yeah, I brought Henry in here with me to help me work either today or yesterday, And so I brought him back in my office. Like, just hang out here. And he did good for a while. And I was totally zoned out. I have my headphones on and I keep this mic set up for conference calls. So I actually have live monitoring, so I can hear because I've got noise canceling headphones on. But I don't notice that I have noise. You know what I mean? I don't notice that I have a hot mic in the room until he jumps behind me. This is also my music room. He jumps on the drum kit and just starts wailing on the snare drum. And I was not expecting it. And so it was like gunshots going off. Like it was very startling. And I was like, okay, dude, you have to go play somewhere else. You can't come play the drums literally a foot away from my face while I'm working. Drums are a loud instrument, you guys. And this is a small room. It's not conducive to focus.
Yeah.
Not getting anything done with drumming going on. Well, I knew you'd have a good take on the Microsoft thing. I didn't know what your opinion was going to be. I didn't know if it was going to be positive or negative.
Yeah.
But I knew you had some thoughts. So
it's kind of I don't think that there are not a lot of really big companies that I would be interested in working for. But I'd probably work at Microsoft. I probably wouldn't have a problem with that.
What?
I don't even.
Because there are reasons, because I know people that work there.
Are you playing them out, Alan? People that work there,
and people told me.
I've always heard good things about the culture at Microsoft.
Yeah.
But at least recent Microsoft.
Yeah.
Unlike as a consumer, as a lover of certain products, I've always been on the Apple side of the old school Apple Microsoft turf war, which isn't really a thing anymore.
Yeah.
There's much more of a turf war between Microsoft and Google and Amazon than on the other side. The reality is that, like, I never really heard of people being physically abused at work at Microsoft, like you heard about Apple in the early days of, you know, Steve Jobs punching people in the heads and people working 90-hour weeks and that sort of thing. And so I've always heard pretty good things about the work culture at Microsoft. I have my alliance. It goes deep. Pirates of Silicon Valley, one of my favorite movies of all time. Bill Gates is the perfect supervillain in that movie, and I can't divorce that from my feelings on Microsoft. But I'm sure it is a great place to work.
And we're in like the post VS Code Microsoft.
It's the GitHub Microsoft, right? It's a totally different Microsoft now,
because they used to totally be the cathedral, you know, as opposed to the bazaar.
The thing is, they used to be the Apple.
In which way?
Apple is more. Everything was Microsoft. the walled garden. It used to be two walled gardens, honestly. Yeah, and Apple is still the walled garden.
It's true.
And Microsoft is now the open forest.
Yeah, I mean, Apple's deal with hardware has always been a walled garden. And they have done that with the app stores to a certain extent. It depends on your definition of a walled garden, but I'll give you that.
I know you guys have done apps before. Like,
yeah,
the process of getting an app in Apple's app store is way different than getting it in like the Android store.
It is. I would make the argument, and this is me. This is not defending. This is not saying that it doesn't make it vulgar. It makes it clearly one. I'm going to be one of those people that's like, I'm going to sound like one of the anti-privacy people. That's just like, well, if you have nothing to hide, or, you know, like, but it's really convenient. But I will say the experience of using an app that you've downloaded from the Apple Store is a whole lot better than the experience of using an app on an Android phone. Totally. Sorry, and Android I'm not guys. Saying, it's true.
Totally.
But shit works. I rarely does an app crash. And it's because they put so much scrutiny and so much stuff gets rejected. And stability is not the only vector in which they reject things. They also reject things that compete with their products. There's that side of it too. Don't get me wrong.
I think as far as I work on a Mac, just like most web developers or many web developers, let's say. Their laptops are the best laptops for what we do, in my opinion. 100%, hands down, Like, no question.
Someone could come close if they could get the trackpad, but no one can get the trackpad.
Yeah, right. Like
I feel like I could switch to like a Linux laptop, and I've seen some that have good hardware. No one has the trackpad.
The problem is like Linux is like that same thing that we were talking about where the rigor that sort of goes into the apps and whatnot that are available. That is crucially important, I feel like, in the laptop. The problem with a Linux laptop, in my opinion, not that there's anything wrong with Linux, but it's you got to tinker with it, man. Like, you're not just going to get it out of the box and never have to fucking touch, like, get down in the source and touch anything.
I think we're going on like 20 years of this being the year that Linux is so easy your grandma can use it. I'm pretty sure I've read that headline forever. It's like, this new Ubuntu thing or Mint, when Mint came out. It's going to be great. Your grandma can use it to, you know, do her crossword puzzles or whatever. She's going to love it. All she's got to do is open a terminal every time she wants to connect to her Wi-Fi. No, it's not there. I very much appreciate the polish of an operating system.
Yeah,
I was troubleshooting my Calibre library app on my Ubuntu box because my Ubuntu laptop has like a terabyte hard drive in it. So I store everything there, but
that's your deep freeze.
It just wouldn't open, and it's because it had some dependency on a Python 2.7 package.
Savages.
And Ubuntu's like Python 3 now. So
savages.
Yeah.
You were warned.
I had that. Well, 15 years. So I opened up my terminal and I went to their page and they were like, "Oh, you want the latest binary? Wget." I was like, YOLO.
Yeah.
Wget and pipe this to bash. You could trust us. Wink, wink.
Yep.
So I think, though, that as far as the OS and the hardware, good things. I think that they really, like, it falls apart when we're talking about, like, the browser. I think Safari is, by a long and large margin, the worst browser now.
Yeah.
I hate like having to take into account like mobile Safari, desktop Safari. It's just a giant pain in my ass. And it's just not as good as the other two browsers, in my opinion. Like, not even close.
Oh, Safari sucks.
It's fucking horrible.
I'm sorry, I zoned out. I was answering some questions in Slack and then was like, I just heard Safari. And I'm like, Safari sucks.
Safari's a piece of shit. What? I think everyone can agree with that. I finally switched.
Maybe this is it. Like, maybe they're good at building operating systems and hardware, but every other app that they make is questionable, in my opinion.
It's changed. Safari was really good. Say what, Willow?
iTunes sucks.
iTunes, Maps. Yeah.
Fucking Maps, Apple Maps.
iTunes is dead. Apple Maps is dead. Yeah, you're right.
Spreadsheet.
There was a time.
Their version of Excel.
Yeah.
Numbers is no good. Their productivity suite is no good.
Actually, the PowerPoint one is really good.
Oh, yes.
I haven't used that one.
Well, that's because Steve Jobs was obsessed with it because he had to give his keynote.
Keynote.
That one is great.
Keynote's actually super good. Like, the way you play stuff and it turns you into an experienced art director using it makes you set appropriate margins. You're like, I want to put this here. And it's like, no, there's no symmetry there. You can't drop that picture there. You fucking Neanderthal. Yeah. That's what. there was a time when Safari was good before Chrome was good or before Chrome was much, when everything was based on WebKit anyway. And Safari was kind of leading the charge.
Yeah.
Safari still leads the charge on a lot of privacy features. Apple still uses some might there on some of the stuff that they're doing.
I don't think they're better than Firefox at this point.
Probably not.
Kind of like the leading security browser.
As far as a browser that, I guess I'm thinking of it in terms of and an on by default browser when you buy a computer, right? Because anyone can get a more secure browser. You can go crazy and go with Brave or something like that. But as far as like the one that someone's going to go to Best Buy and pick it up, if you're comparing it, Edge and Safari, Safari has done a lot of like built-in privacy by default. And they've also, yeah. I mean, Apple's pushed several things towards the things in like HTTP protocol or different settings with, you know, iframing, cross-site scripting type stuff. They led that for a while, but it's not as good anymore. You know what I've seen a lot? I haven't switched to Firefox yet. I finally got myself off of Safari maybe 2 years ago and into Chrome. And so I don't want to change it again, but that's where I'm at. And I keep seeing people pulling up API endpoints in Firefox and that awesome UI that Firefox gives for browsing API endpoints. Yep. And it's like, oh, I need that. I need that bad. So
I wish I could make the switch.
But that might get me to switch.
Man, I'm so all up in the fucking – I'm still committed at this point to the Google ecosystem.
Come on over, man. Like, they got a lot of stuff. Well, they've also got built-in – they've got a ton of built-in privacy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I hate COVID-19 for vehemently is that it's drugged me back onto Facebook.
To
communicate with people that I wouldn't normally.
It's the darkest time.
Oh my God.
But, the pinnacle of the thesis.
That's the headline of the show.
Firefox has Facebook tabs.
They
completely wall it off.
They silo. They make you socially isolate Facebook.
you socially isolate all. And all Facebook related content, like so, Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, Oculus, all get like its locked into a tab, and they're just like, "No, you don't get to look at what's in the other tabs. You mean evil thing."
It's like reverse private browsing. It's private browsing to the server on the other side. I'm assuming.
Yeah. So
that's good. They can't open up your microphone and serve you ads based on conversations in the background.
I haven't put it on my phone. I've had to fight that. There's been stuff that's been like, do this. Because my kid's school does quite a few things on Facebook Live for their like assemblies. Mm-hmm. And so that we'll put it on the TV and they'll be like, yeah, chat in there, Dad. And I'm just like, I feel like, and they're just like, oh, you want to actually use Facebook with your phone? Well, you should install the app. I'm like, no, never. I'll like go grab stuff and use it. Like, here's a computer that I wasn't going to use.
Go get you
this is basically like
go get you a burner iPad,
Facebook laptop. That's exactly what it is. Burner.
It's like, use it to log into Facebook once and then throw it away. you can get those burner Android tablets.
That's a Ubuntu netbook remix that I've hacked.
Or get you like a bunch of those, like you can get like a pallet of like $25 Asus Android tablets from 10 years ago that still barely run. You can find those on eBay. That's what you need right there. Just one time use disposable Facebook apparatuses.
That's what I will do.
Can't believe it. Sorry to hear that, Tyrell. That one's going to play you a sad song.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's my Tyrell's back on Facebook riff.
Well, I'm trying to think of code-related stuff that's not coronavirus. Because I'm trying not to stay there, but, you know.
Yeah.
I did download the Kaggle data set. I haven't played with it much yet, but I downloaded it yesterday and I kind of tinkered with it today.
So I'm getting ready to do a GeoPandas talk for BayPi.
Okay.
And there was a,
are you our Django speaker talk next month?
Yes.
Sweet. You're doing it virtually. We more than likely.
Yeah. I assumed as much. What's funny though is, so there was a Django talk about GeoDjango recently. And so Django talk, the podcast.
Okay.
Like, oh, well, that's very fitting. So I listen to their podcast. They keep referencing, like when they're talking about the geospatial data, they keep referencing tracking viral outbreaks.
Oh, God.
Well, I mean, I know what data set I'm going to use.
Yeah.
Yeah. With my GeoDjango talk.
Was it an old episode, or was it just timely?
It wasn't super old. I feel like I'm shouting all of a sudden. I apologize.
No, you're good.
How old was it? Let me look.
But it wasn't like last week.
No.
It wasn't. So they released that episode and it just aged like milk.
They've got a remote work podcast episode now.
Yeah. Nice. We're all talking about
so
that.
Have we all.
Yeah.
So have
yeah.
we all.
Yeah. Indeed.
GeoDjango, January 29th.
Okay.
Oh, okay, so not that long ago.
Yeah, it was on people's minds. Yeah. It was just a distant thing. It was that thing over there.
Yeah. Because this woman who is their main person worked for electric companies. So they were trying to like pinpoint stuff like that. But go ahead, Blake.
No, I was just going to say, because Casey was asking about technical stuff. I've been working on a thing recently that has been kind of interesting because it's a different sort of a different way to think about things. So one of our primary applications is a React app, and as of now, it's all client side. So make the request, we send you back the JavaScript bundle with the HTML and the CSS, and it loads React and does all the things. But one thing that we're trying to do is sort of one of the benefits of the app that we're selling is that it is much faster than the competitors' apps.
Okay.
The way we benchmark that is using Google's Lighthouse tool, which will give you a performance score based on you basically give it the URL of your app and it'll go and hit it and give you a performance score based on the time it takes to paint, for the app to be
first
inactive,
paint and like a bunch of different metrics. Or, yeah.
We've got, when we first finished the app, I think we were at like around a 90-ish score, which is good. 100's the cap. But of course what happens over time is you add features, you add, you add considerations for other things that they're basically a lot more conditional code. Like sometimes I need this, sometimes I don't.
Right.
And with the client side application, a lot of times you're going to send all of that to the browser. Right. So you're going to send all the things. So what I've been working on lately is, taking a hybrid approach to making it faster. And that means we're going to render as much of the app as we can on a server ahead of time.
Right.
And what that basically ends up doing is, so as an example, when you load the app, there's a kind of like an image at the top, and it's like think of it as like a creative in an image for like a brand or something. Right. So, it's like, hey, buy this thing or whatever. Normally, when that gets sent to the browser, it will make the request to the server to the CDN for that image and then load it, etc. But what we're doing is we know ahead of time which image to load, so we're going to go and get that, and then we're going to embed that in the HTML as an example. And then we're going to make as many requests as we can to the server to get as much of the data and tell React to figure out what should the layout of this, what components should be there up front and all. And what we end up doing is having like a shell of an app that gets rendered. So we've got like that image at the top, and then we've got some kind of like, you know, they're called skeleton loaders, but the loaders that kind of show the shape of the interface.
Mm. Oh yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So the app ships with all of that in there. So it looks like something happens kind of immediately.
Right.
And then everything kind of gets filled in as the data comes back from the server. The other part of that, cause I mentioned it's kind of a hybrid approach, and is using Webpack to tree shake. I feel like buzzword, but buzzword.
We love that tree shaking. We love that love tree shaking.
So, you know, I love my webpack. So,
shake the sugar tree.
To tree shake out the components that we don't actually need. And I'll give an example. If you have this app, depending on how it was configured, you have like, let's say you have a carousel view of like products, and then you have maybe a list view, a vertical list view as an alternative or something. What we can do ahead of time is we know what that will be ahead of time. So when it server-side renders, we can have it create separate bundles for each of those layouts. And when it loads on the client side, it'll only request the bundle for the layout that it needs.
So that would, like, you mean like that's based on some client side preference, like always show the list view by default and it loads
it? Yeah. So if you think of the app or the experience, different ones built for different customers, and they're like pre-configured.
Okay. So these are like, these are almost like deployment configurations for individual customers. Yeah. So you don't have to load all of the features that that customer didn't buy or didn't request.
Exactly, yeah.
Even though it's a common platform. Okay, right. I'm following now.
Yeah, so we take everything out that they kind of don't need.
Right.
And that ends up really, really significantly increasing the performance and decreasing the time it takes for everything to load.
Right.
So that's what I've been working on lately is taking this thing and kind of migrating it to that approach. And that's been super interesting. I love doing shit like that. That's like tooling and messing around with performance stuff is probably one of my favorite things to do. As far as development,
Blake's dream job would just be building developer tools.
100%
at NPM for Microsoft.
100%. I'll do that. I'll do it.
He's looking, Microsoft. If you're listening, if you're tuning in.
I've kind of known that for a while, but if I could get a job just building developer tools, that would be the dream. I feel like
it's out there. Anyway, Blake. It's out there.
I know. It's got to be the right thing, though, right? Like, I don't know.
Right combination.
Yeah.
You got to start Blake JS, and then you get to be in control. Make a Webpack successor called Blake JS. and make it so that Alan doesn't have to create an alias for Blake Run Serve.
That's the main purpose of it. Yeah.
And you can build tooling professionally.
Yeah, maybe that's what I need to do.
Do it.
You guys will be my first customer then.
Sure. Yeah. Just make it work with Vue, because that's the only JavaScript that we pinch our nose hard enough to touch.
Right? So, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, not in my opinion, but yeah. I don't give a shit if it works with Ember. Well, cool. Who's.
I saw tickets to EmberConf were free, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they streamed it the other day.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, is it in the midst of everything, or is it just that Ember's gone that far?
Yeah.
I think it happened a couple days ago.
Got it.
I think so. I'd read about it on Reddit. I'm still in the Ember subreddit. It's like, I just can't leave. I have to know what happens to that damn hamster in the long run.
I'm still on the, it's probably my least favorite framework to work with.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I've never worked with, what was that one back in the day before all of them, like Backbone? I've never worked with Backbone, but I would almost probably prefer that over
Barely Tinkered with Ember,
if it was still performant. Yeah.
it was Monday, Wednesday, or Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week. It just happened. EmberConf, that is.
Mm.
It's come and gone.
Gotcha.
Did I bring up the, like, I can't remember if I was on the show or not after doing this, but a couple weeks ago, we had an issue with one of our apps is in Ember, and I was trying to figure that out. Did I talk about that? Because it was.
I don't think so. I remember you talking about Ember. Maybe does Ember on version 3 finally? Did that come out? I remember that.
the Octane thing, yeah, that came out.
You and I talked about that. I don't know if that was what you meant. I'll let you tell your story now.
So we had this issue where the Ember app that we have is kind of an internal facing app. And it's actually what people at the company use to set up the configuration for the other app that I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this issue where they would try and enter information into an input box and they would hit save and it wouldn't save their information. Mm. Or they would basically get an error from the server. And so looking into this, this was the biggest pain in the ass to fucking figure out what was going on.
Man, you're deep into Ember data.
Dude, it wasn't even that. So what ended up happening after you kind of looked at the network request, what was going on is we expected the data to be in one format.
Mm-hmm.
Ember was sending it to the server in a different format.
Oh.
And once you go through the code and you're looking at the JavaScript and whatever, you don't see anything. Like, we're not actually manipulating the value anywhere. So you think to yourself, well, how is this being changed? Spoiler alert, it was fucking Ember doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the box.
Help you out, bro.
Trying to be helpful. Exactly. And this is part of my...
It was like, this data, you're probably sending this data to a Rails app. Let me make this Rails for you. Ember data's adapters work. Are just like, you want all of your requests to speak Rails, right?
Yeah. So hot tip. The way that I found the issue is encountered something sort of similar, five years ago or something. And there in JavaScript, you can do an object.freeze and give it an object. And then if anything tries to mutate that object, it'll give you a stack trace.
Yep.
So what ended up happening is as soon as the value gets set in the component, I froze it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you type in the thing and then you watch Ember like try and update its own model over and over and over again. So that's how you found it. That's how I found it. But like, so object.freeze to the rescue. I didn't go there immediately, right? Because
in a sane world,
you don't expect
your framework to be poking around with stuff that you already put in state and being like, let me reformat it for you.
Yeah, your state's all wrong. Let me fix it for you.
Yeah, no worries. Pay no attention. Maybe, I'll handle this.
You wanted it in XML, right?
I don't know. But I kind of looked and it was kind of shitty because there were okay ways to solve it. Do it after doing, the Googling.
Right.
And
the Stack Overflowing.
Yeah. Yeah. But they were all on newer versions of Ember, which was,
back on Ember 2, run into that, always find an Ember 1.
Yeah.
Stuff. Yeah. Well, anyway, we have that problem with Rancher, using Rancher to provision Kubernetes, which is awesome. But so much Rancher got rolled out, especially their enterprise product, because they have an enterprise edition, got rolled out on Rancher 1, and they support it indefinitely. And so they made major, major changes to almost all of the paradigms in Rancher when they went to Rancher 2.
Yeah, they did.
So you find problems all the time, and then a litany, an endless list of solutions for those problems.
For a second where you're like, that's finally.
And it's like, just go into the admin and change this. And it's like, there's not even an admin in Rancher 2. does not map.
Throws you off the trail for like an hour.
And it's a version of Rancher, like all of the, every solution you find and all the documentation that like Google has indexed well, it's for a version of Rancher you can't even install now, but it's still supported because of all the enterprise customers. So it's just like, it's really, really difficult. That's a tough problem. And it certainly affects other open source products and to some degree. Mm. That's got to be hard for Elasticsearch. They roll out major versions. They're on like 7 or 8 now. And they have several LTSs in there. And so that's got to be a difficult problem, is how do you purge old solution and old documentation from search indexes and all of the independent blogs where people, you know, wrote a tech blog solution to a problem. I mean, you don't is the answer. Right. But that's a lot of landmines for developers to wade through.
Yeah, definitely.
So, and I guess Rancher 2 worked a lot better, so no one wrote about solutions to problems. So that's all you can find in Rancher. So
does Rancher not have like sort of the LTS model?
They do, but they like, I don't think they forked their enterprise product. I could be wrong about this. I'm not super learned in it. But I don't think they forked their enterprise product and their typical commercial or open source product, until Rancher 2, which means that, so much of the enterprise documentation is still out there for it. So I think Rancher 2 is the long-term support. But everything Rancher Enterprise, that wasn't a word that people used until after that version change, which means, and I think Rancher Enterprise is still Rancher 1. I don't know. It's kind of confusing. But they do have LTS. I think Rancher 2 is the actual long-term support.
Okay. I'm surprised that
it just doesn't change the fact that, you know, people wrote all kinds of stuff on Stack Overflow that hasn't been deleted.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
And and gets more keyword weight when you Google it. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a pretty tough problem. I feel like that's like when Angular 2 came out, mm-hmm. and you had to go and they separated the two, Angular JS versus Angular. So you would search for, you know, I need an Angular problem, and you'd get both solutions,
right.
or mostly mm-hmm. Angular JS. Because that's what had been around for 3 years at that point.
Right. Yeah. That's a problem everyone has with major version changes, I guess. That's a community problem. The community, you have to be like, go take down your old blog post or update them for the new version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. It stopped raining finally. Who's ready to break out of quarantine?
Yeah, man. I'm out of beer.
So. Yeah, Tyrell's out. You're out of beers, is that you said?
I'm gonna have to get beer delivered.
You can get beer delivery now, though. You should do it. Fuck yeah. That's cool. It's like we live in a real city now.
Had beer barns before, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Yeah. We've upgraded to Mississippi status where you can drive through liquor. They've had that for a long time.
Yeah.
Or in Texas, in Dallas, you could order stuff. There was a company called Drizzly, I think, was booze delivery. Mm-hmm. It's like Uber for schnapps.
Cocktails.
Yeah, exactly.
Makes tons of sense. I mean,
yeah, let someone else drive the booze.
Let the sober person drive the things for you.
You're my designated driver.
I will pay you money. Bring me beer.
Uh-huh. You know? It's like that system we all had when we were underage. You had that, you know.
Yeah.
You had someone in your group called Blackjack, and but you'd give Blackjack money, and he would bring you booze.
Hot springs, Casey.
This was in Conway. Thank you very much.
Touche.
He was 21, was the joke, by the way, if anyone didn't catch that. Blackjack.
Yeah, I didn't catch that. Yeah. But yeah, we had our own Blackjack. Thing about Blackjack is you never knew what you were going to get. You just knew you could give him $10 to $20,
mm-hmm.
and he would bring you something that would probably get you drunk.
Yeah, it was probably, it might be Jim Clear. Often was.
It was usually Jim Clear.
Yeah. And he was on the value model. It was just like, I will solve your problem. I will take for all $3. Of your money. Yeah. I will find the cheapest solution that solves your problem by volume. Yeah. And I will pocket. Yeah. And I will pocket the spread. So good luck with that. Let me know how boost carryout goes. Just because I'm curious about it. I don't even know. I don't know. But it's going to be a thing forever now.
Yeah.
We're not going to be able to roll it back. It's going to be like critical to people's business operations. All right. Well, have a good week. Another week of isolation down. Unknown amount of weeks remaining.
Yeah. Only 16 left.
Only 16, at least only 16 left.
Imagine, like, let's say this is all over at some point, and we come back and we listen to these, we're like, damn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be like, that's what's going to happen. Sad.
Yeah.
And a little bit. Yeah.
There's an entire disaster movie genre that is just completely off limits now. No one's ever going to watch like an Outbreak style movie for 40 years and be like, I lived that. I don't need to see it.
Yeah.
Tyrell says,
I watched Contagion Saturday night.
Did he?
It was surreal, though.
It's too meta.
Yeah.
Too meta.
The moment that it punched me in the gut was when they were talking. They literally said social distancing, and I was just like, what?
Oh, that's real.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a real thing, y'all.
CDC's the one that
they didn't cook that up during Corona 30.
Watch this movie and they're like, there it is.
That's what happened. That's what actually happens. The current administration went and watched Contagion, and they're like, "What do we do?" I don't know. They said something about social distancing. Alan's reading. Is that reading the stand or watching the stand?
Dude,
I can't tell. Is that the DVD?
That's the DVD. Oh,
nice.
Yeah, it's just corny enough that it makes it, you know.
Oh, it's perfect.
Digestible.
M-O-O-N. That's
Yeah, it's a movie.
That's M-O-O-N. That spells Corona.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like a miniseries, right? It was one of those. It's probably
It was a TV miniseries.
Yeah.
With the Langoliers. On here, there's like six episodes.
Hot garbage.
Something.
You don't like the Langoliers, Tyrell?
Hot garbage. What's that?
Langoliers is one of my favorites of all time. It's awful.
It's so bad.
Yeah, it's so bad, but it's also great.
But awesome. It's so bad, it's awesome. Yeah,
I rewatched it somewhat recently, and when they come out with their little buzzsaw teeth, it's a lot worse than I remembered, the CGI.
it was a lot worse. I remember I was terrified of the stand, and it was great.
Uh-huh.
Like, I was like, I went, when I watched it, I was just like, oh, man, this thing is crazy. And then, so I was like, I started watching the Langoliers, and like the buildup was great. And I was like,
the
buildup
was tremendous.
And then nom 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 nom. Pac-Man is flying around eating everything.
It was three-dimensional Pac-Man. He had a triangular mouth.
Which one came out first back then? I want to say Langoliers.
Oh, the stand was first.
The stand was first. Was it? Yeah.
Because the stand had me amped for the Langoliers. That's why they even got to do it. And then after the Langoliers came out, they're like, no more Stephen King miniseries.
You ruined it. They lacked what they needed to do that right in film.
Sure.
We need a gritty reboot of the Langoliers. You heard it here first. And like, change what they are. Don't make them little floating Pac-Man things. But it's the 6 hours of buildup that know they're coming. 6 hours at least of that show. Of build up for the Langoliers and a terrible, but the build up is tremendous.
The build up was solid.
Yeah.
Yes. The moment the reveal happened,
the delivery.
Just like,
So if someone would remake it, you have to do it. You have to watch it. Even though we're talking about how bad it is, Blake, you still have to watch the Langoliers.
It's true.
Yeah.
I'm putting in the show notes.
Are you about to hold up the DVD, Alan? Do you have the Langoliers as well?
I don't have the Langoliers on DVD. No.
It used to be on Netflix. I don't know if it's still there. I'm looking.
Yeah. I saw it back on there.
I Am Legend is a good movie.
I Am Legend is a good movie.
Yes, it is.
I'm looking at pictures and this looks great.
You should watch.
Like Willow, said, it's so terrible. It's awesome.
There's an old version with, there's the Will Smith one, but there's also the one with, I think it's Robert Redford. No. Who's the guy? Who is Moses?
Charlton Heston. Let my people go.
And the short story is good. You should read it.
Hey, I oversold this. Apparently, the Langoliers is only 3 hours long. So it must have been 6 30-minute episodes when they put it on TV.
Mm. Oh, it had to have been hour episodes.
That's what I thought, but they're only...
It was probably like 4 40-minute episodes.
Oh, that's probably what it was.
Check my math on that.
Yeah,
that
you're right, though. It's a total duration of 3 hours. I thought it was twice as long, which doesn't fare well for how good it is, because if it feels twice as long as it actually was. But it's a must. Everyone must watch The Langoliers.
It is on YouTube.
Even if there's a letdown. Go watch it, Blake. Okay. It's good. It's a scary movie, but it's not that kind of horror. It's suspense. And then the actual scary part is laughably not scary at all. I want to see it. I want to see the remake. Alan. Play us out, Alan.
Play us out. Today's episode is brought to you. Go into a NPR read or something. So, all right. I'm going to drop out, go figure out some takeout, support some folks.
We'll see everybody next week.
Yeah.
Have fun in your quarantines, right. Everybody. Bye,
y'all. Yep, y'all be safe.
Thanks for listening to Friday Afternoon Deploy, recorded and produced by the team at Lofty Labs. If you enjoyed the show, you can subscribe to future episodes via iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. You can also follow at Friday Deploy on Facebook and Twitter for episode previews, live streams, and other behind-the-scenes peeks. Past episodes and show notes on this episode can be found at friday.hirelofty.com. That's friday.hirelofty.com. If you'd like to contact the show, or if you're local to the Northwest Arkansas area and would like to be a guest on the show, you can email us at podcast@hirelofty.com.